So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I'm senior editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm reviews editor Sherlyn Lowe.
And this week, we're going to be talking about the Galaxy Z Fold 2 with our mobile editor, Chris Velasco. It's been a very busy week. There's been so much news. There's news from NVIDIA and Intel, new hardware from everybody. IFA is going on. There's so much stuff, so much news. I am very tired. Sherlyn, are you tired?
I am not tired because I am dead.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
We're either dead or tired. The podcast is giving us life. So
yes.
Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. All your support helps to keep the Engadget podcast going. Drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com and join us live. We do live shows every Thursdays around 10 a.m. Eastern. If you join us live on our YouTube channel, you can ask us questions because there are usually Q&A segments. So that's always a fun thing, right?
We love interacting with you guys, honestly. We know a lot of you are regular listeners, so really appreciate the support. It's too early in the morning for me.
The Sherport. We really appreciate the Sherport. All right, let's kick things off by talking about the phone everybody has really been waiting for this year. The second generation of Samsung's big folding devices is Galaxy Z Fold 2. And we have Chris Velasco, our mobile editor, here to chat about it. Chris, how's it going?
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been hours since I've spoken to you people.
Gosh, I hate talking to you so much. No, I'm kidding.
I know. She's dropping that real stuff like really early on.
We're just all tired of each other. This is how it goes. But
this week has been insane.
What can you talk about, Chris? Like, what is up with the Z Fold 2?
So just to be clear for everyone watching and or listening to this, unlike the situation that we had when we unboxed a Surface Duo that we could not turn on, which really just involved two grown men fondling a phone and talking about said phone for like 45
minutes. Listen, I'm very proud of that because that is exactly my brand of just geeking out over things.
We got an amazing shot of you sliding that into your pocket.
Into my pocket. By the way, so yeah, we did not have a podcast last week, but we did record this hands-on on
live
YouTube of the Surface Duo. We can't turn it on, but go check that out. Galaxy Z Fold 2, though. What's going on there?
So this is obviously the second generation Galaxy Fold. And just right off the bat, I mean, I've been using this since we unboxed it. I don't even know how many days ago because time has no meaning anymore. Yeah. But just like in terms of hardware, literally every issue that I had with the original Galaxy Fold has been more or less fixed here. There are some things that, you know, are very much matters of taste that I don't know how I feel about. There's like this very interesting like ridged brush pattern along the edges of the phone that kind of make weird grindy sounds when you like sort of prop it up on a table. But generally, I love this phone. I'm also really quickly reminded of the fact that there's a reason I didn't buy the first one.
Yes. Well, because you're a sane human being, even though you make insane gadget purchases sometimes, Chris.
I don't buy that anymore, though. I really
you
don't.
You used to. That's your brand.
It is my brand. Yeah. What's really been interesting for me as just like a person living through COVID is that, and this very well may be like a thing that's specific to us since we just have so much stuff laying around, but I don't think it is. Like because we're spending so much of our time at home, like we're always within arm's reach of like a laptop or a desktop or a TV. Like the need for a gigantic screen with you all of the time is, for me at least, a fraction of what it used to be. So immediately, like, this thing is an absolutely beautiful device. It is a feat of engineering for sure. And it's one that I personally can't imagine needing for a good couple years at least now.
Yep. I was like, everyone was super hype about this. I'm like, I still don't need a tablet just yet. Like, I have been spending some time with a Duo, I think I can say that. And I can't talk much about my impressions about it, but I'm struggling to find the situation where like a phone can't do what I need it to do and I need like a bigger interface, but we'll see. I don't know. The Z Fold 2 also has a similar proposition, right, V?
Yeah, like the one thing I use the Fold, and I thought I would be using the Z Fold 2 for is, you know, I take the subway to the office back when there was an office to go to, and like it's Devendra can attest to this, like it's a good like 30 minutes roughly on that subway.
Which is, by the way, from because V and I used to live in the same neighborhood, that is a fast subway ride compared to what a lot of people in New York have to go through. So yeah, 30 minutes.
So 30 minutes, which again, definitely not the worst, but also maybe not the best. I used to be able to count on just like going in the morning and like cracking open a book and reading something on a full size screen. And then I could just sort of close it up when I got to my stop and had to switch it and throw it in my pocket. And that by far was my favorite thing to do with the Fold. It was a really like the metaphor worked of like folding your book and like closing your book and folding the Fold. And now I don't take the subway anymore. So it's been really weird. Like I've been having the most fun using this big sort of external display, which, you know, the big knock against the original Galaxy Fold was that you got a screen that was maybe, you know, two thirds the size of this thing wedged in the middle of
it. It was 4.6 inch. Yeah.
It looked ridiculous and it was largely unusable. You could use it to frame up selfies or something or like really quickly respond to a text if you hated yourself. But, but like this by itself is perfectly usable.
It's another phone. It's another phone on top of your folding phone.
Yeah. Like I would buy this phone.
I think you can. I think it's called the Galaxy S20. Come on.
Well, no.
It's the Xperia 1.
Yeah, it's like the Xperia 1 or like the Essential Gem before Essential went.
You would buy that very low phone. Okay.
I think so. Because, I mean, I'm sure you guys have heard this too, but at least in the conversations I've had with device makers, like there's starting to see a pretty pronounced shift in what people want out of their devices. And for some companies, it's they want bigger screens sort of that are more available to them. And that's why foldables kind of make sense. Mm-hmm. And for others, it's like, well, the need for an omnipresent big screen is less for our users. Mm-hmm. So we're moving in a direction where you get this sort of smaller screen all of the time. So I think we're starting to see a really interesting like buy or trifurcation in like the approaches people are taking to phone designs. And this is like a very maximal phone design. Like this is the most... It's the most extra phone. So yeah. I was going to say it's the Sherlin phone, but I feel like that's kind of... I feel like that's... No. I hesitated.
Before we keep going on down this very dangerous slippery slope, let's, for our listener, I know we've talked a lot about this device this week, so V and I can feel like we're rehashing some stuff, but let's take a step back for our listener and explain kind of what the price point for this is and also what are the specs they can expect.
So this is a $2,000 smartphone, which admittedly sounds terrible. I think there's, so the original Galaxy Fold went on sale for $1,980. So it was basically a $2,000 phone. But for me, at least, and we talked about this a bit with Ben, our producer, yesterday, just the crossing the mental threshold of going from a device that costs $1,000 and several hundred dollars to $2,000.
No thanks.
Like, I very much do not like that. And the thing that kind of gets me is, we'll get to the phone itself in just a sec. But I do have to point out, because our live stream audience, when we were unboxing thing, was very sort of adamant about it. You know, back when you bought a $1,980 Galaxy Fold, you at least got like a bunch of stuff to kind of like ease you into it, right? Like, you were very clearly a well-heeled beta tester for this phone, but at least you got like Galaxy Buds, you got a case, you got like a decent assortment of stuff that you can start using with the phone right off the bat. You get none of that here, so you don't get headphones of any kind.
Samsung has to save money, okay, guys?
You get a charger.
You think headphones grow on trees?
You get a SIM ejection tool, and you get a couple pieces of paper saying, you know, don't drink coffee near the phone.
Is it at least a metal SIM ejection tool, or is it plastic?
Yeah.
It is metal. Have you? I don't think I've ever seen a plastic SIM ejection.
I've seen some out around.
No thanks. But yeah, so aside from that, we are looking at a fully, you know, flagship device. It's got a trio of 12 megapixel cameras around the back. It uses the Snapdragon 865 Plus chipset, which I believe for maybe the first time, Samsung isn't doing any kind of differentiation between the model that we're seeing in the US versus elsewhere. Because
I'm sure their engineers were just like, we're tired, guys. Could you just pick one chip?
We're tired, and also, like, I don't like being hated by people, because that's the thing about the Exynos chip. If you, if you're tuned into, like, the geekier parts of the internet where people have, and in sort of international markets as well, where you get Samsung phones with Exynos chips versus the Snapdragons that we get in the US, there, there tends to be a pretty significant performance difference. Like, people just don't like Samsung's chips, and yet Samsung keeps shoving them down people's throats. But this is the first time, and I guess it sort of makes sense because they're asking so much money for it, that you do kind of get that no compromise experience no matter where you live.
I want to quickly point out that, like, people on the live stream also told us the during our unboxing that the headphones may not come in the box, but apparently you can just request a set from Samsung and they'll give it to you. So it's not like you're really, I think, cheating you, although it's just a lot less convenient, especially during the pandemic
time. They're cheating you because they know a fraction of the people who buy this phone are going to be upset enough.
And also,
like,
what do you get when you request? Do you get the crappy wired ones, or do you get actually buds or something?
It's about AKG, and you don't get like actual, like, wireless earbuds. You're just, like, wired ones, I believe. The other thing I also wanted to point out for people who regularly have listened to this podcast is that I need to eat some real humble pie here, because I've been giving y'all the wrong price for the original Galaxy Fold for very long. I've kept saying
for $2,300
for so long, because you know why? Because that was the price of the Huawei Mate X, and then that was $2,300, and then Lenovo has a foldable laptop tablet thing that was north of $2,500, I think. Again, not entirely sure because my brain is mush.
Let me just say, I blame Sherlyn entirely for this. So please yell at her.
Fully responsible. I will need to eat stuff. I apologize for that mistake. The original Fold was 1980, not 2300, like I've been going on about.
But I have a question, though. Like, V, how do you feel about I assume you go outside occasionally. How do you feel about having a $2,000 phone? Because to me, I just feel like the more expensive my phones are, the more anxiety I have about dropping it, losing it, having it stolen, opening it at, you know, in public, anything, really.
Well, for me, and especially for me, because I review, like, a lot of expensive phones, like, there for the review period, like, there are, I do occasionally drop it, not because I mean to, but just because I'm a total klutz as a human being. But in general, I do my best to baby these things, because I know they're going back to a company at some point, and I really don't want to have to pay for something that I don't even get to keep. Once I sort of cross the threshold, if I buy a phone, for instance, even if it's, you know, I use iPhones fairly frequently, and I've been using an iPhone 11 Pro Max, and that is itself, like, a pretty expensive phone. I'm very careful for, like, I don't know, 6 months to a year. Then after that, it's like, whatever happens to this thing happens, like,
because you secretly just want to upgrade after a year. So
yes, that's of what course. Happens. but like, walking around with a device like this, which is just so well built, like, it's a constant reminder physically of just how premium this thing is. And this has come up on a couple of the live things that we've done so far, but I generally wear, like, really tight jeans, and the only which frequently means that the only comfortable place to put a phone like this is in my back pocket. So in the few times that I have gone out with this in my back pocket, I do feel like the world's worst person.
And also, I have to tell people in New York, like, especially when people are on the subways, like, the back pocket is literally the worst place for your smartphone, because I've definitely seen people, like, walk through the subway, creep around, and just see, like, who has, like, an unchecked smartphone, you know, where they're standing by the door and they can just, like, grab that phone and keep running. So, you know, I understand. It's tough if you don't have front pockets. It's tough for women especially. But yeah, tight jeans. It's hard out there. Be careful with back pocket phones. Yeah.
I'll just say it's really hard to be V's friend. Like,
well, just in general. Just in general. Come on.
God, I'm never doing the podcast again. Jesus.
But I mean it in the way that, like, you have to be, in general, just concerned for yourself. But when you're hanging out, you're also like, V, can you please not sit on that thing? Or, like, can you please
That's an unfounded concern. Your phones are fine. They'll be fine.
It's hard to be your friend when you, like, randomly return a phone, like, with a shattered front to me.
I know exactly the situation you're thinking of.
Wow.
That was me and Mike, our social media producer. Sure. That was a joint collaboration of failure. We were shooting in a gadget today. He threw me a phone. I could, like, flash it and make my point. But then I didn't catch it because I'm not physically well coordinated. Sorry.
It's really hard to be your friend. But anyway, back to the Z Fold 2. Any thoughts more than what we've seen? I mean, we haven't gotten any real life time with the Tom Brown edition, by the way, right?
No, which is totally fine by me because that thing is ugly. People don't know. The Tom Brown edition is you pay $3,300 and you get a silver Galaxy Z Fold 2 with an Aquafresh red, white, and blue stripe running down the back. You get the new Galaxy Watch. You get the Galaxy Buds Live. You basically kind of get the package you wish you had gotten with the regular Galaxy Z Fold 2, but you have to spend an extra $1,300 for it. The skin is terrible looking. The icons look like trash. The wallpapers are bad. Like, just like buying a $2,000 phone is indulgence enough. Like, you don't need to actively make it worse to justify your like weirdo hype beast fashion trend needs.
And that's like, I think they know their market for this, though. It is VCs, it is startup bros who want like the hot new thing. So I was thinking of like the last season of Silicon Valley, right? Where I think the douchiest startup bro had he had the red phone. Which is literally the only place I've ever seen the red phones, because give it to the big startup, you know, startup bro, because only they would buy it. So it's for those characters. Sure.
And I want to say, like, doing the math a little bit for that Tom Brown edition, right? Like you said, you get the phone, which is $2,000.
$2,000.
Then you get the Watch 3, which is it starts at $400. So let's say you get the $400 model. Then you have the Buds Live, if I'm not wrong, the Beans guys. And the Beans, those start at $150, $130-ish. So
they should have just called them the Galaxy Beans, by the way. Why not?
They really should have.
Just do it.
But the total price there is like just a little bit under like $2,700, I guess, or $2,600. And you're paying $3,300 really to get that Tom Brown design and the custom accessories like watch straps and case design things for your buds. So I think the value there is hard to like justify unless you're like a really hardcore Tom Brown fan or like Dev said, like a VC person who really
VC
wants
bro.
That.
It's all for people, the people tagged in VC Humble Brags, that Twitter account, which is fantastic. It's just for them. But hey, Samsung will make some money.
Yeah. And Trillin, to your point, like it's difficult to justify that value, but that's purely because it's meant for people for whom value is not a concept that they have to grapple with generally.
What I'm more excited for is the potential or the possibility of a BTS version of any of these things. I mean, we've seen Samsung do some BTS versions of what was it, the Buds Plus?
I think there was the Buds, but they also definitely did the BTS Galaxy S20 Plus, which in fairness to Samsung, I listened to K-pop. It's not like my go-to, but like that's a good-looking phone. Like I would be totally fine just using that phone.
Yeah, and I'm a budding Blink, which means I am a fan of Blackpink, and I would 100% buy a Blackpink phone. So
we're just making up words now, aren't we? What is happening? What?
Just get with the lingo, Devendra. Okay, but to be fair, Samsung's not the first one. Or this isn't even Samsung's first time, but they're not the first one to team up with like an outside designer to make a different variant or more expensive variant of his phone. We've got OnePlus has worked with McLaren. And in the past, we've also had Huawei with Porsche design phones.
Well, let's not forget the Apple Hermes watch band thing. Yeah.
But like you could almost justify Hermes, right? Like the Apple Watch for a while at least was this like weird, vaguely aspirational.
You can justify the gold Apple Watch, right? How much did that cost?
The editions weren't they like $10,000 or something ridiculous? Mm-hmm.
So
like
really, Samsung and everybody is just like chasing that dream. Okay, folks, like what is going on here? I mean, Sherlyn, you spent some time with the Surface Duo. We still cannot. We can't turn
still
it on.
Can't
listen
talk about
in
a
private.
Lot of-
In private, we can turn it on. In public, on video and everything, we cannot. So just so you know, this is how reviews work. But Sherlyn, you could talk about the feel and the folding and all that stuff. Any thoughts based on compared to this?
I want to compare. Yeah, I can compare it. I want to tell you that the Duo's hardware, now that I've spent some time just holding it, opening and closing it, it feels really good. It really, so honestly, good. The weighting of it is very nicely balanced. I've held it a lot like open and then with one hand, like usually my left hand, while my right types on the other screen. And it doesn't feel like a strain. It doesn't feel like it's about to fall out of my hands.
Yeah.
The hinge is super sturdy and it's a lot thinner. Like these single individual screens, they're each a lot thinner than the Fold looks to be, the Z Fold 2 looks like. So that alone, I think, already makes me feel good. I saw some comments during our live unboxing of the Z Fold 2 that asked if Chris could open and close the Z Fold 2 with one hand. And he could. And they were saying that the Duo can't be open and shut with one hand. Honestly, though.
I don't think that's the problem.
I feel like you could.
You can shut it with one hand. You can't open it from flat. Fairly easily. One hand. Yeah.
But I can't open it with one hand that easily.
I would say once you get your hands on these things, that may not be a thing you want to be doing, just given the size of it and the way it's made. One-handed opening, like
this is
you may want to be a little more careful. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the hinge also feels a lot different. I mean, I'm expecting the Z Fold 2. Again, I haven't touched the Z Fold 2, but from what I know of the Z Fold 2 based on videos and of the Z Flip, I think the hinge on the Surface Duo is actually a lot smoother. Like it actually holds in position possibly just a lot better.
I will say unreservedly the best hinge I've ever seen in my entire life. Like just not just gadget, but any product. Like this is something Microsoft has been perfecting for a while. So
yeah, it's very pretty too. It's oddly just kind of attractive because there's like these two silver cylinder things that are just next to each other. But anyway,
we're gonna have to meet up somewhere in the middle at some point.
I was going to say we really need to
stay 6 feet apart and just like fold at each other.
Yeah.
Haven't you learned?
What have we learned?
Sorry, I couldn't help it.
But no, I do think that a meetup is in the works for me and Chris Velasco so we can both play with these things and then tell you on a later show maybe about what we felt when I can fully talk about the software.
Yeah, a folding video. We'll hear more about the Surface Duo soon. V, can you say when can we expect a review of the Z Fold 2?
So I, what can I say about that? Here's what I'll say.
Okay.
We can basically publish a review whenever we want, but this is probably by far one of the most important phones of the year. So we're going to take a little bit extra with this one. We generally, you know, if we have the opportunity, we'll turn a review around in a week. That's with the video and the full written component and the photos. But for this one, we really want to do this one justice. So I would say give us like a couple extra days to make sure that this one is as good as it deserves to be for something like this.
Well, let me just say, people, you do not want a rushed review. Like that's the thing, especially with these new devices. The Surface Duo, I think, based on just my time with it, it'll take at least a week to learn how to use it and how to get used to those types of devices. So
To really hammer home that point, in general, I prefer if we like took our time with devices to be able to really get to know them better before we put our thoughts down on paper and on video. But sometimes we don't have the luxury of that because companies give some super tight timelines sometimes, but they're really better. And I think in general, I don't feel like I need to compete with like all the other people putting up their reviews up on day one or something. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can do it more justice, like you said, if we spend a bit more time with it. So that's our philosophy, at least.
Yeah. For the three of
us. All good. Thank you so much, V.
Thanks for having me. It's always really fun. And I'm going to go play with this thing and try not to break it for the next couple of days.
So this week was a pretty big news week for PC gamers and PC fans in general. NVIDIA had a big event, actually not really a big event, it's like a 30-minute live stream, but the news was huge because they announced the new RTX 3000 cards. These are things that we've been waiting for a very long time. It's been 2 years since they announced their RTX 2000 series cards, and they're very exciting. So let me just break this down real quick. These are all running NVIDIA's new Ampere architecture, which promises to be both faster and more efficient than the last generation cards. And the big thing here too is with the first RTX cards, NVIDIA introduced real-time ray tracing to PC gaming. And that was a feature we saw adopted by a couple games like Control and I believe Battlefield. Not very many, but a couple. And I love Control so much, but the thing we learned is no matter how powerful your card was, even if you had the $1,200 RTX 2080 Ti, which I still have in my system right now. Control, you flip on RTX and that card will start to really chug, which is kind of sad. No matter how the game looks great, but RTX really took those cards down quite a bit. So The RTX 3000 cards look like they're going to be a huge bump for real-time ray tracing, so that's going to be big. And let's go down the line here. I think the most interesting one is the 499 RTX 3070, which NVIDIA says is faster than the RTX 2080 Ti. Now, that's impressive,
that
right?
This is crazy, yeah.
Yeah, it's a $500 card that is technically faster than their old $1,200 card, because that thing launched at quite a bit. So that's a huge value for gamers, people who waited, people who had the GTX 1000 line. This is a good time to upgrade. Mm-hmm. There's also the 699 RTX 3080, which is the new, like, top of the line for the mainstream, you know, bunch of cards. But the thing they really left for the end is the RTX 3090, mm-hmm. which is $1,499. This card is huge. This card takes up 3 PCI slots. It's a beast. I've never seen a video card that looks this huge. I've seen PCs that are maybe the size of this video card. So
wow.
It's a big thing. And what we know so far is they're all going to be better for RTX. The new architecture handles RTX a lot more efficiently without hitting your frame rates as much. They're also going to draw a lot more power too. So it's going to be interesting to see what power limits people come into as they start to adopt these things. I will say the RTX 3090, despite being so expensive, is probably a great thing for a lot of like creators and not just gamers, but people who game and also shoot and edit video. You know, they do a lot of stuff here.
I know one of our video producers on the studio's team was very excited about the NVIDIA news. And also, can I just talk about that event really quickly? Because it happened, I think, right after the Galaxy Z Fold 2 event. So that was a really, really packed day. And Chris Velasco and I had been doing a live stream earlier that day, so we were cutting into NVIDIA's event time. But then when I went on and saw the stream, it was like happening out of Jensen's, and I forget his last name, his kitchen?
Jensen's Huang, yeah. Like his, it was in front of his kitchen and his giant chef's stove. But his stove, which, you know, has the huge like vent hood like every rich person will have, his stove has like marble columns to the sides of them and like really, really like gauche, really like ornate things you find in the museum just sitting in his kitchen. So
I heard he has a fantastic spatula collection, which is great.
He does. You're not gonna be the CEO of NVIDIA and not like really kick butt with your spatula collection, okay?
Yeah.
I was actually waiting, because they were showing off a lot of like stuff RTX could do in real time. I was waiting for the end of the stream for Jensen to hit a button and be like, this kitchen doesn't exist.
Oh my gosh, exactly. It's being rendered real time
in RTX. Yeah. That'd be hilarious.
I was
going to
say, exactly. The ray tracing provided this background that I'm in front of. I don't actually have 12 spatulas.
Realistic ray tracing stuff, yeah. What else from NVIDIA? They have they showed off a bunch of software. They showed off, you know, a bunch of features, specifically things that would like help you cancel noise and help you remove backgrounds in your videos too, which will also be powered by your RTX cards. That's all fun. Like they're figuring out a lot of new ways to use the hardware they have in these GPUs. They also talked about this thing, I forget the exact name of it, but it is a direct storage technology that'll basically help you get the textures from the card right to your system without like waiting for the disk slowdown. So basically means like load times could be instant. Streaming like big open world games could be a lot faster. This is technology we've been sort of hearing about on the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X. So it kind of makes sense that we're starting to hear more about it on PCs too. So this is the future of gaming, you know, NVIDIA's RTX 3000 series. And we will have some impressions soon. I'm very excited. The 3090 for $1,500, that's a lot of money, but still $500 cheaper than the Galaxy Z Fold 2, as our chat reminded us. And also, this is a card that's faster than NVIDIA's RTX Titan, which typically went, I believe, like $5,000. Like, those things went for several thousand dollars. So this is a huge leap in performance, and it's going to be vaguely accessible to people who do a lot of video editing and do a lot of content creation. So that's pretty exciting. And what goes well with a good new GPU? How about a brand new CPU? technically not true, but Intel did tell
very
us
smooth.
The first bunch of its Tiger Lake chip news. And I mentioned this before. They talked about some of the architecture. This week, they showed off some of the actual models we'll be able to get. And these are only for laptops right now. They're not talking about the desktop chips, so I guess that transition doesn't quite work. But these Tiger Lake chips, seem very exciting. They've also come up with some new architecture that's super thin transistor technology I talked about before, which basically means they can hit higher clock rates. They can do a lot more. I think in some instances, these chips are, you know, 1 gigahertz faster than they were before.
Whoa, one whole gigahertz?
Yeah, gen over gen, which is surprising.
What were they before, like three already? Three-ish?
I think before they kind of maxed out around four.
Okay.
With some of them, but we're seeing now like 4.5 gigahertz. We're seeing really, really fast designs. Jeez, wow. These Tiger Lake chips are for their, you know, ultra thins, ultra portables. They're going to be available in the lower power thermal profiles, but they seem pretty exciting. They seem fast. And the new Intel Xe graphics are going to be a huge leap ahead of the Ice Lake graphics we saw last year. They were showing off some stats in games like Gears Tactics. You know, they were getting near 55 FPS with this integrated graphics, whereas wow. in AMD's most recent CPU, GPU, that Ryzen combo was getting around 30 FPS. So, you know, they're doing pretty well, and I think they're really bringing the fight to AT&T. So I'm AT&T? Excited. Yeah, sorry, not AT&T. They're bringing the fight to AMD, not AT&T. God, they're
this
really
has been
bringing
such
the
a
fight.
Week, everyone.
I am so tired. They're really bringing the fight, which is really cool. And the other thing too is Intel announced Intel Evo, which is their new second generation branding for Project Athena laptops. So this is actually a sticker you'll be seeing on systems, you know, this fall and into next year. And these describe systems that really just hit all their performance benchmarks for 11th gen chips. So they'll wake from sleep within a second. You know, they will fast charge up to 4 hours within 30 minutes. They'll have 9 hours of real world battery life and 1080p. So I think like all of that is pretty, you know, it's a really easy way to figure out which systems are good, which systems have the best technology. And the thing about Project Athena, we didn't really, they never labeled them. You know, that was the thing they talked about with us, with the media. But I don't think consumers ever learned what Project Athena was, right, Sherlyn?
Just the fact that it's using the name Project, it's a code name, it seems like. It just seemed very uncertain or not confirmed. So it's nice to see that. I mean, the way I read the Evo news was just like, this is our official branding for Athena. And, you know, moving forward, you're going to see the word Evo. And for those who, like, are familiar with the Ultrabook days, this is going to be a similar sort of cue that this is a thin and light that you can buy and it'll last long and it'll perform well and all of that stuff. Yeah. So
it reminds me of that, right? Because Ultrabook was a badge. Ultrabook was a big marketing term and they described a new type of computer, which honestly looked a lot like the MacBook Air. Like that's what Intel was getting to and PCs were getting to. But now these Intel Evo machines are going to be all sorts of different things. Asus announced a new convertible that is like 2.6 pounds, I believe. Like pretty fast, super thin, very light, but still with a decent amount of performance. So I do feel like we're getting to a point where, you know, the PCs of our dreams, maybe a Surface-like device that is actually powerful and, you know, can do a lot more. Those things are becoming more of a reality with these chips, right?
I mean, I already found Project Athena laptops super nice looking and they're very thin and light already. Yeah. So, I mean, if Evo improves on that, that would be really impressive. But I think if Evo just continues what Athena has been doing, I would be satisfied. Most of them last long enough. Most of them have, again, the designs are great. The performance is decent, pretty reliable. So I think this is good news. Ooh, this is good news for consumers overall. I wanted to ask you really quick on Intel Xe graphics really quickly. You said that the integrated option could hit 55 FPS. Is there a version of Xe that's discrete or is it all integrated?
So now we have to like change our language a bit because Xe is technically discrete tech that's bundled, integrated directly alongside the GPU, similar to how AMD's like, Radeon stuff works. You know, it's graphics processors right next to the CPU all
so
in the single
like
core.
It's not like on die or something.
Pretty much on die, but there are like the Intel Iris graphics or their Intel HD graphics, so like basic integrated stuff is still around for some of the cheaper chips because some companies may put a Tiger Lake chip with an NVIDIA GPU or even an AMD like a Radeon GPU. Like there are different ways of configuring these things, so because of that they have the choice of what kind of Tiger Lake chip they could be doing. And speaking of XE, we did learn, I think earlier this year too, that XE graphics, that XE, you know, technology is moving forward into other stuff too, right? That's they're going to have a dedicated video card next year that you will plug into a PCI slot and will eventually compete with AMD and NVIDIA stuff. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with that. It's very exciting to be, you know, a PC gamer and a PC enthusiast right now because Intel's going into uncharted territory. These new chips seem very exciting. AMD, now we're looking at AMD, is like, what are you going to do, guys? Because normally AMD is the company that's done a good job of combining CPU power and graphics power in a single package. So, yeah, there's a lot we don't know. I'm sure AMD is in a corner just like, I would say like biding its time. I'm sure AMD has some major announcements coming. The 4000 series laptop chips we saw this year were pretty fantastic. And we didn't see enough of them actually hit machines. But, you know, what was it? I reviewed the ROG G14. And that machine is fantastic. So fast, affordable. And it was an AMD processor together with NVIDIA graphics. Still my favorite gaming laptop of the year. You know, so competition. Asus, competition is good. This is the whole point.
I was going to say, exactly. The competition between these chip makers is heating up. I think Intel has felt the pinch or has felt that it's, you know, needing to keep up for a bit now. So I'm glad they're stepping up.
For sure, for sure. And listen, like Intel certainly deserves criticism too for its delays. I think they had just recently announced they're not having any 7-nanometer chips until well into probably not even next year, like probably not until 2022. They were late to 10-nanometer, but what they are showing is that they have a mastery of their design and their fabrication. They were able to eke out more performance from the same 10-nanometer process they've been using since last year. So that's, you know, I think that's a big step forward for them. The performance matters at the end more than what, you know, the microns of your chip architecture. If they can get good performance out of 10, that's still good for consumers. Yeah. So I'm down with that. Are you excited about any of these, Sherlyn? Because I know you've heard of some of these Intel laptops too, right?
Definitely excited to see what the power improvements will be for the laptops. But again, we won't know until these start rolling out. So I'd say stay tuned. But if you have any feels, this is a pretty nerdy topic, I know. But if you, dear listener, have any deep thoughts about the NVIDIA versus Intel chips, send us an email to podcast@engadget.com.
Let's move on to news from IFA, which is the annual technology festival in Berlin. What does IFA stand for, Sherlyn? It is the
International
Funkausstellung Berlin?
Internationale Funkausstellung Berlin. I have no idea. I have my best friend is, you know, fluent in German, and she really hates it when I try.
But anyway, we talk about IFA quite a bit, especially as we get into summer. And let me just tell you, as this year has gone on, all of the like Google, remember where you were two or three years ago photos
ones,
are just like, remember where you were, you know, in another place, not trapped at home in a functioning society. Don't forget about this. Thanks, Google. Yep. But now is the time for IFA. IFA is a huge, huge technology show and actually bigger than CES, I believe. And it's where a lot of European and Asian companies kind of come together and show us new stuff. Even this year, it's happening virtually, although there is some in-person stuff too. But what have you been seeing, Sherlyn?
So yeah, like you're saying, there's a ton of IFA news coming out this week, which kind of boggles my mind because I'm like, y'all, let's not make this happen. But for all of the updates on all of the IFA news this year, you can go to engadget.com/tag/IFA2020. Just to get the full breakdown. But companies like TCL, Qualcomm, Lenovo, Samsung, blah, 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 like a whole laundry list of names have new products to show off. I'll start with TCL because they actually came out with like new display technology, which whenever there's a type of new thing, I'm always most intrigued by it. And TCL's made a name and is mostly known for like its affordable thing. So like affordable TV sets, affordable phones, affordable tablets. In fact,
they're the world's biggest TV manufacturer right now because of
exactly. Yeah. And they've like, I think maybe like been able to get that name by making their set so good for such a good value price. So this thing that they announced, this IFA is called TCL's Next Paper, NXT PAPER. And it basically is a sort of screen technology that's similar to e-ink or e-paper technologies. And what is actually interesting about it is that it can support very high resolutions of up to like full HD, as well as support video playback. They haven't shared like specifics on a frame rate that they can support, but considering that typical e-ink displays can only refresh really slowly, this is really interesting.
And color e-ink has been like a dream they've been chasing forever, and it's just not happening because
we
of that
haven't. Yeah, and so they promise colors on this thing too, so it'd be like magazine paper quality, cool. maybe. So the big benefit of this for what TCL is saying is that they've also filed 11 different patents related to eye protection. They've been certified by TÜV Rhein, I think, German, some German like standards facilities, and I haven't seen it in action is the problem, right? Like, I've only seen a picture of it, and pictures are very misleading, so I don't like to judge off of just pictures. But yeah, the idea is that it reduces light output on the screen, it reduces blue light and flicker, and it's meant for, like, TCL is not trying to put this on a smartphone. They're trying to make tablets and e-readers with this thing, and they're saying that it's like 65% more battery efficient than a typical LCD.
That's cool. That's cool. Is this flexible at all, or is this just not, like a flat thing?
Okay. It looks like it's flexible from the picture they show.
If you call it paper, I'm thinking flexible paper, but okay.
Right. Yeah, I didn't think of it that way, but I don't know. They didn't say it was flexible, and if it
now,
was,
well,
it
so this is LCD-based too, right? So would be impossible for it to be flexible. So,
they're also saying it's like a third of the size of a traditional LCD, or a third thinner. I can't remember exactly the comparison, but like so much thinner that you can expect an e-reader made out of this display to be a lot thinner than like your Kindle or something, which are already pretty thin. So I don't know what they're going to make with this. But that was interesting. TCL also had a bunch of, speaking of tablets, they had a bunch of other news. I'll quickly just shout them out. I mean, they made a Tab Mid and a Tab Max, basically Android tablets for cheap. You can get, I mean, you could also get the Galaxy Tab A something, but if you want something even cheaper that is not bad at all, the TCL tablets could be for you. They also announced true wireless earbuds that, honestly, the only thing I can really say about them is that they seem really freaking cheap.
They're going everybody to go has for... true wireless. I mean, if you go to Amazon now, you will find Anker true wireless earbuds for $50, sometimes even less. So, hey, it's cheap. It's out there. Yeah.
So these are 99 euros. They promise, like, they have this design called Super Ellipse that they, you know, are saying is going to fit more comfortably in your ear. They don't have active noise canceling, but they have electronic noise canceling, which okay. and they're IP54, so you can sort of wear them while jogging or something if you're sweating. So I don't know, another option for y'all. And yeah, some other news, like a wearable for seniors. So that's TCL's news. There's every company had its own big dump news like that. So that's TCL's.
That's a good way to describe it, because that's what it felt like was happening all week. It's just like vomiting news. But that NVIDIA vomited all its news in 30 minutes. And Intel did it pretty quickly too. And then, yeah, all this IFA stuff just feels like it keeps coming at us. You spent a lot of time talking with Qualcomm, Shrilin. I know how much you love them as a company.
I just cover them a lot. I know their workings pretty well. So Qualcomm also had somewhat of a news dump for IFA, which, by the way, I really enjoy tackling all this IFA news dumps while two major shows are going on. Anyway. But yes, so Qualcomm announced let's get through the like less like arresting stuff first. There's some audio updates. There's some new like updates to its acoustic audio processor technology that improves its noise cancellation and echo cancellation features. You can read the details on Engadget.com. I left that to our audio expert Billy Steele to take care of, so I don't know all the details there. They've also announced Snapdragon 400 series chipset, which is entry-level chipset, but with 5G support. So that does mean that we can expect even cheaper phones with 5G soon. But what I tackled of the Qualcomm stuff, which is something fully in my wheelhouse, is the Snapdragon 8cx Gen 2. Very straightforward naming there. This is the follow-up to 2018's Snapdragon 8cx, which was the ARM-based processor that Qualcomm made for PCs. So this will be Windows on Snapdragon. And as we've talked about on this podcast before, Windows on Snapdragon, oh boy. But they're trying again. And what's really interesting about Windows on Snapdragon for me is, or about the Gen 2 8cx, is that like when you talk about actual power improvements, There's none. Like, there's no clock speed jumps. There's no, like, increased RAM or whatever.
This is pretty bold. What have you guys changed this year? Nothing.
I was having a hard time making sense of the press release because I was like, and the video that I watched, because they would not call out performance improvements at all
also,
over
so
the last
this is,
gen.
It's the same model number as before. It's the 8CX. It's just 8CX Gen 2. What is
You're
Gen
right.
2 about it?
So it has better AI support. It will offer faster processing of certain things. Like, there's this eye contact feature on the Surface Pro X that the original 8CX also supported, where the webcam can see if you're looking at the camera itself, or what, so it looks like you're making eye contact during your video conference, and then alert you to look up. But there's also two more things AI-wise that the 8CX Gen 2 enables, which is something called Loom.ai. They've partnered up to do this avatar replacement thing in real time. So, like, if you're doing a Zoom call and you're super burned out, or you have like an outbreak of hives or something, and you don't want to have your real person appear, you can replace yourself in the Zoom call with an avatar, with a digital Samsung or Animoji like avatar.
Sure.
And have your facial expressions.
It was only a matter
mapped.
Of time until this happened, right?
Yeah. Right. We're fully replaced with avatars now. So so I saw a quick demo pre-recorded of this person, Cristiano Amon, who is the Qualcomm president. He made like facial expressions while he was talking, and an avatar matched his expressions like exactly. So that was great. That's just like funny. It's not like incredibly
cool.
useful, I don't think. It is.
That sounds cool. That does not match the terrifying thing I remember seeing at the Oculus Connect event last year, which was people wearing Oculus headsets, and they had 3D mapped those people's faces. So we were looking at 3D models of their faces being perfectly captured while they were wearing headsets. So we are getting to some weird, wild spaces when it comes to digital avatars. Yeah.
I can't wait. But the last AI thing about the Gen 2 is that Qualcomm has teamed up with Sophos, a security firm, to provide AI-based security that detects threats 7 times faster than existing systems. So that's good news, because they really want the 8CX Gen 2 or these Snapdragon PCs to really be enterprise machines too. So that's some of the AI updates. There's also support for Wi-Fi 6, Bluetooth 5.1, up from the previous generation, which is 2 years ago, which is nice. So, like, Qualcomm is positioning this as taking on the likes of an Intel Core i5. I think more of a lower-end Core series. And they keep calling out performance improvements over those systems. So it's like, they were like, oh, we're 18% more performant than an 10th generation Intel Core i5. And I was like, okay, but tell me how much better than last year's last generation. And they can't say it. So 8CX Gen 2, interesting. Windows and Snapdragon's not going anywhere soon. But what was interesting to me is that Microsoft Chief Product Officer Panos Panay was also made an appearance on Qualcomm's briefing video, because he wasn't done making appearances. The funny thing was, in this video, he said something like, because him and Cristiano Amon were having a conversation, and Cristiano was like, oh, congratulations on the launch of your super fascinating Surface Duo. And
Powered
was
by
like,
Qualcomm hardware. Yeah.
Powered by Qualcomm. Exactly. And then Panos was like, yeah, thank you for the collaboration. Well, and then he tries to segue, and his segue was this. He goes, I'm very passionate about the Duo, but I'm even more passionate about Snapdragon PC. And I was like, are you? Because I was like,
if he was, Windows on ARM would be a lot better, right? So,
well, here's what he then announced, right? So Microsoft, or Panos, on that briefing announced that Microsoft is going to move the App Assure program over to Snapdragon PCs or their Snapdragon customers. So App Assure is something that Microsoft launched, or at least App Assure for desktop, is something Microsoft launched around 2018, I think, or 2016, to help move apps from Windows 7 to Windows 10. Mm-hmm. And app compatibility is always a hugely important issue for any sort of, especially because they were retiring support for Windows 7.
Right.
So
they
promised that you can work with a Microsoft engineer to resolve any app compatibility issues until it is resolved. So like, they're going to be with you until you can get app compatibility issues resolved.
Let me just say, this could technically solve the greatest problem we've had with every Windows on ARM device, which is that the apps just don't work. A lot of things are running in either emulation or don't run at all. So it's exactly. typically a bad experience. This could be pretty cool. I feel like as we talk about aperture, I can certainly feel all our listeners falling to sleep. So what is your big takeaway, Shalyn? Because I don't, whenever I've brought this up to people before, nobody's super interested, but this could be big, right?
I do say, I will say that like Windows on ARM and Windows on Snapdragon have been very, like have had a troubled history, I guess. And maybe this will help. So the big news of the 8cx gen 2 is that Microsoft is going to support aperture for Snapdragon. Hey. It's saying something, I guess.
We'll see, because both tested the Surface Pro X. I believe that's what it was. The super thin, super well-designed Surface that had great hardware, but apparently crap software support. So I would love for devices like that to be more realistic. What if we heard from Samsung at IFA? I feel like they had a ton of stuff.
I want to cry because because Samsung had a Z Fold 2 event on Tuesday, and then they had a Life Unstoppable event yesterday for its IFA news. And we know Samsung's a giant conglomerate. It makes refrigerators, TVs, and all
that. They make everything,
so, So the Life Unstoppable event was supposed to be mostly home entertainment focused, but Samsung, for the love of God, was like, no, here are some more gadgets from the mobile side. So it announced also a Galaxy Fit 2, or I don't know if it's Galaxy actually, it's just Fit 2, Galaxy Fit A42 5G, which is an affordable 5G phone, a Galaxy Tab A7, a Flex laptop with 5G, a Galaxy Book Flex with 5G. So those... That's a lot of things that you can go and look at in gadget.com for the details.
And I believe that's
on...
an Intel Evo device too, the Flex 5G. So there's a lot going on there.
So all of those are interesting products. And the main takeaway for me about Samsung's news is that in a week where they launch something that's a $2,000 phone, they also, you know, released a bunch of things in the A series, which is their everything but the flagship series, right? So mid-range and entry level. So the Galaxy A42 5G is, we reached out to Samsung for a comment on pricing. They haven't said anything, but a lot of sites are calling this possibly their cheapest 5G phone yet. And that's important because Samsung's cheaper phones are still really good, at least on displays and on cameras, right, compared to the others. So that's exciting. I think the Tab A7 being a cheaper Android tablet compared to the Tab S7 Plus is also a nice option for people who are looking for something better than a Fire HD or something. Mm-hmm. So I like that. I like that Samsung is like, okay, we did a $2,000 phone, but here are some things that might cost a lot less.
I mean, that's been their thing for a while too, because they're one of the last Android companies left making tablets. Everybody else has kind of given up on it. So they have cheap phones, they have cheap tablets. It is, hey, that's good. That's something, even though we make fun of their model numbers and prices. What's up?
I wouldn't say they're one of the last companies making Android tablets, because who else announced Android tablets this week? My dear friends at Lenovo. First of all, the Galaxy Tab A7 is Samsung's, you know, affordable Android tablet. And then we had TCL making its Tab Mid and Tab Max. Lenovo came through, announcing Monday some new Android tablets as well. What's interesting here is that Lenovo in the past when they've made, or in the recent past when they've made Android tablets, they've been like slightly cheaper. They're more like in the $500 price range. They have interesting kickstands built in and that sort of stuff. But this time around, they've gone full like, let's take on freaking the Tab S7 Plus with our P11 Pro. I believe that's the name. It was Monday. It was a lifetime ago. I can't remember the actual name now, but I think it was the P11 Pro. And yeah, it's going to have a keyboard accessory. It's going to be able to support a stylus and stuff like that. It's a high-end Android tablet from Lenovo. And it's competition for Samsung, which is a good thing. You can see all the details again on Engadget.com. But Lenovo also announced something that I covered called the Smart Clock Essentials. Which is
that looks really cute. Let me just say, I really like Lenovo's accessory things, like their smart display. They're fun. I like them.
I love Lenovo's smart home play. They've made a lot of good, affordable devices in that space. The smart clock from last year or 2 years ago was really, I liked it. I have one in my bedroom, but the Smart Clock Essentials is like $20 cheaper. So it's a $50 smart clock, and it's basically a bedside clock with assistant built in. So for me, initially when I was being pitched this, I was like, why can't I just go to Amazon and buy a $20 bedside clock, right? But then the whole thing is that this is a Google Assistant device too, so you can also speak to it and ask it to turn on your lights and like set routines that include this device. So there's a little bit more to it than just a bedside clock. So I guess it's nice to have it's just pretty super basic if you didn't like that $70.
No, I kind of dig this, and it doesn't have a camera. It doesn't have a screen properly, right? So
yeah, again, with the smart clock series, there's no camera, and the screen's meant to like dim at night too. So it's just like less intrusive and less like like gadget mania in your bedroom or something.
It feels like we had mastered alarm clock technology. And then with all these smart devices, it feels like we took weird steps all over the place. So
I would
totally buy one of these.
I know. I can't wait to get one in and like see if I like it, because I need a new one. And it has bigger, much bigger LED font too this time around to show the time so you can see it from further away, which is nice. That's not all the IFA news. We still have more, but I'm going to just leave you guys with one more that stood out to me this week, which was ZTE. Remember them? They're back with the... Well, they've never really fully gone away. They've still been releasing Axon phones, which is their flagship line. And honestly, way back in the day, Axon was a very well-known phone series, or well-loved anyway. They announced the Axon 20 5G. The Axon 20 is not a newish phone. We've heard of the Axon 20 before, but the Axon 20 5G is this year's announcement for IFA from ZTE. And the really big thing about it, at least to me and Chris Velasco anyway, is that it has an under-display camera, which is really cool. Okay. We've seen other Chinese phone makers make it make something like this before.
Does that mean there is no like actual hole in the display for it, or how does that work? Because you would still need space for the camera to sit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't think there's an actual hole, but I can't tell you off the top of my head because it's been a blur. But I would check out Engadget.com again for just like all of the information on all of the news. Again, Engadget.com/tag/IFA2020 is where you can get caught up on all of this virtual IFA news. And there's still a lot of stuff from PC makers and still more stuff coming up. We need to take a break soon, but for now, send us your thoughts on all of these IFA news as well, whether it's on Twitter or on email.
Let's move on to what we're working on. As you can see, many, many things this week. I will say upcoming, I am trying to figure out how to review the Logitech Herman Miller chair combo, which I'm sitting in right now. It feels fantastic, but nice. I don't know how you review. It's like, it makes my back feel good and my butt doesn't hurt anymore.
Wow.
10 stars, you know, 10 out of 10 review. I'm trying to figure that out. I'm also testing out a hot upcoming gadget that I think people will be excited to learn about in a couple of weeks. So this is the busy period. I feel like everybody right now is working on reviews for major upcoming devices that, you know, our readers will be excited about. So I love September because it's busy, but it's also like when the new stuff starts happening. October is when it starts shipping. And also I'm still gearing up for November when we get the new consoles and all that fun stuff. And yeah, also the elections and all. We have so much to look forward to and so much to be worried about. Sherlyn, what are you working on?
In addition to all of that stuff that I've been spending this podcast telling you guys about and trying to stay alive, I'm also working on two major reviews in the background that one.
I don't think you're busy enough, Sherlyn. You know, like if there's one thing I would say about you, it's that you just don't work enough. Okay.
Shout out to our regular listener, Jonathan, I think Medina, who tweeted and replied to one of my tweets yesterday saying that, how do you get so much done? You guys do live streams, conventions, review things, write for the site, you know, take all these briefings. I'm like, oh my gosh, someone understands what it's like. A review isn't just writing it, it's testing, taking photos, shooting videos, writing scripts, and then writing the review copy, putting it in the CMS, getting edits. So it's like, it's a lot of work for one major review, and I'm doing two at the same time this week, which is... Just someone throw me one of those float ring things. What is it called? A life
preserver? Life? You wouldn't know what it's called because...
No, my brain's broken. My brain is broken.
And now for our pop culture picks. One thing I want to shout out now is that, hey, The Legend of Korra is back on Netflix. And it is It actually never was on Netflix. So Netflix is now the place where anybody can go and with a hit of a button, go see Korra. I think before it was on CBS All Access. This is the sequel series to Avatar The Last Airbender, which we know was a huge hit on Netflix. So good timing for them. And just have to say, this show is perfect. I love it so much. If you're a fan of anime, if you liked The Last Airbender, and maybe you want to see a twist on that, you know, world that's a little more mature with older characters, it's fantastic. And also, I will say, no joke, some of the best action choreography in anything, but certainly within animated shows, like the way they use their spirit powers, it's sometimes gets to be a little Dragon Ball Z, but it's also like fun, great, just great martial arts in there too. So as an action fan, I really dig it. And also as somebody who loves 2D animation, like the show has done some incredible stuff. I love that it exists. I love that it's so easily accessible now. You can hear me talk more about it on Republic City Dispatch, which is a podcast I've been doing with some friends of mine and podcast luminaries like Joanna Robinson, Dave Gonzalez, and Matt Patches. That just Google Republic City Dispatch. I believe that is under the Fighting in the War Room domain now, but we're doing some recap episodes of every individual season. But 8 years ago, we actually reviewed every single episode of the show. So it's so weird. You live long enough to see your early podcast be relevant again. So we're kind of reviving that feed, adding some new retrospectives. Go check out some of our early reviews too. I love this show so much. Sherlyn, I think you would love it because
I don't know
you
how
dig
many
martial
times...
arts. Yeah.
I don't know how many times I would tell you I don't really watch a lot of animated works. But
maybe you
okay.
should. Maybe you should instead sure. of bad sci-fi.
Wow, 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 wow. I will shout out Archer is one of my favorite animated series that I will keep going back to rewatch.
I like Archer, but I will also say barely animated. Come on. Come on.
Yeah, it's not super.
It's
not
the
super.
like stilted Cartoon Network yeah. style of animation. But yeah, what have you been watching? What do you want to highlight this week?
Because I took a break last week, I was able to watch some stuff. This week I haven't. But I spent last week trying to watch as much stuff as I could, so I could recommend stuff for this podcast. And I still love Lovecraft Country. It's still really good. I mean, the third episode that
good.
I just saw.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
The second episode was kind of a mess. Like, I feel like it's going all over the place.
I liked it
a lot.
I loved the second episode because the plot just kind of ran like a wild horse. But
it certainly
the
ran
third episode...
like a wild horse.
The third episode was also very good. It's a good mix of science fiction and like how it sucks to be a black person in that era. Mm-hmm. But I also watched earlier, and I want to recommend this earlier, but I kind of forgot, Project Power. It's on Netflix, and it's been number one on like Netflix for a while, but I only just got around to like telling y'all about it. It's not like it has a very interesting premise where like basically people can be super juiced up for about like what 10 minutes or 10-15 minutes
with a drug,
with the drug. It's very Lucy like in that a lot of other films have tackled this idea.
I think more like Limitless, which was the thing which also had like the drug with super becoming your superpowered self. Yeah,
it was that one too, which is now a TV series. But the premise is there, but the characters are, I think, very interesting. I like Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I liked all of the different actors in it as well. I saw some criticism of this show saying that it doesn't really make full use of the premise. And I agree, but it looks like there's room for a sequel, so hopefully we get to see that explored a little further. I like the idea that different people react differently to the pill, so they get different
it's
powers.
Very much a Netflix movie, I'd say. Like, it reminds me of like, hey, here's a cool premise, and we don't like set any of this up really well. Like, we don't really like really massage this narrative in a good way. But yeah, the idea of, hey, you could get one superpower with this drug, or you could die. You know, like there are consequences to it. The special effects in this movie are really good, right? Like, it looks fantastic.
It does look really good. Mm-hmm. It's just a good escape for like when you want something not super thinky, and you just want to check out people like hurling weird shit at each other, I guess. But my real recommendation, because I try to find something that people don't always know of. This week is a Korean film called The Witch : Subversion. I don't know if you've seen that, Devendra.
I've heard a lot of things about it. Yeah. People are like buzzing about this movie.
It is pretty good. It's a part one of what's meant to be, I think, a trilogy, but it's not clear what the filmmakers plan to do with it yet. It is also science fiction. It's Korean, and similar to a lot of Korean films we've talked about on this show, it's about a sort of underdog-ish story, but it's about sort of genetically enhanced or sort of like nurture versus nature type of superheroes. It's won a bunch of awards. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember offhand the names of everyone involved with this movie, but I found it very good. Like, the acting, as always, is very good. There are some twists that I won't reveal for you, but it's got a lot of very good action. It's got very engaging plot that I found myself like stuck to the screen. It's very rare that I'm stuck to the screen throughout a show nowadays. So Devendra, you should check this one out.
I'll check it out. It looks like it looks super cool. Did you ever see The Villainous, by the way?
No, what is
it? Just random drop. Ladies and gentlemen, The Villainous, perhaps one of the craziest action movies of the last few years. Just, Sherlyn, go look up the first 10 minutes of The Villainous. It will, kick your butt. It is fantastic. It's so much fun. It's also like Korean action meets melodrama at some point, too. Like, it is both things, which is, I don't like one part of it, but I love the action part of it. So recommend that to everybody, too. Well, that's it for this week on the Engadget Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find me online at Devendra, and I podcast about movies and TV at the /filmcast at /film.com. And Sherlyn, where can we find you?
If you want to find me whining about how much work I have to do, I'm at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter.
When Sherlyn should be working and not tweeting, that is definitely where you can find her. Email us at podcastengadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify. Don't, Sherlyn. Has my surfer duo. Come on. Come on.
Hey, pal. Yeah, put phone on head.
Let's make
phone on head.
Can we make them touch?